You are listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Create Here. Produced by artists and curators from Big Car Collaborative, Create Here is your place to listen to conversations with people making intriguing, innovative, and impactful things happen on the cultural front in Indianapolis, Indiana, and beyond. Find out more and access additional episodes at WQRT.org.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Create Here. Today I'm joined by artist Jason Gray. Jason Gray is a furniture maker residing in Indianapolis. Wood is the medium most often used, but he also dabbles in slip cast ceramics and looks for inspiration of found objects. He earned a BFA at Heron School of Art and an MFA at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Gray is the lead builder at Big Car Collaborative and works with me, Shate Marsh, co-founder and director of programmings and exhibitions, on the Chicken Chapel of Love, the Chicken Palace, and the Wandering Grove. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So a lot of times people experience your work as an artist on campus, but they don't always get to meet you. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk a bit about your show first that you currently have up, or would you like to talk about just a particular work on that's permanent on the campus?
Cthutopia. The beginning of it is based on Cthulhu, the Lovecraft monster. I can say that pretty easily, but the show title was thought up in my head and hard to say. But the idea is, the words come from Cthulhu, the monster, and then also the concept of a heterotopia. The philosopher Foucault came up with this term for spaces that are unlike regular society and ways we accept things. So like prisons, brothels, hospitals in some cases, asylums, and also mirrors. Like mirrors can be a little world within a world. So it's kind of playing with our imaginations and kind of thinking back to when we were kids and daydreaming about different things and how we've lost that as we grow up. We know more about the world and realize there aren't little portals to different places and different, maybe not dimensions within dimensions. And,
but you've built one for us here at Tube Factory.
Yeah. I kind of want to, play with space and how we think about the space we occupy and little cabinets that we see and what's behind doors that we can't open or things like that.
Yeah. So you walk into the Jeremy Ephraimson Gallery in Tube Factory, and the lighting is also, I really love the lighting in your exhibit, and really contributes to that feeling that you want people to experience going in them into the space. Can you talk about, tell the audience what they'll see when they walk into your show as they come down the stairs?
As you come down the stairs, there's four items on pedestals, kind of arranged in a circle, and a large case off to one side. And the four pedestals are lit by old rusty shades dropping down from the ceiling, rather than typical track lighting you find in a gallery. They're really dim Edison bulb style. And then there are three violin cases on the wall that have been built into cabinets. And those are lit with track lights, but I've switched out to a dimmer bulb in those. But I kind of like the intimate feeling of a space like that. And it was a big gallery that's not symmetrical. And I like playing with sacred geometry and trying to make it feel symmetrical. So it was kind of playing with how to get it in the middle and fill the space with only a few objects relative to other shows that have been there.
It's very different. You know, it does look like your works are kind of congregating together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like how you've arranged them in the circle. And then tell the audience what's in the violin cases and a bit about those works.
In those cases, there are some doors and a couple and shelves, and then there's a skull in each one. I had for my graduate thesis in Madison, I had two upright base cabinets, one of which is still in the show. I built the cabinets into those. And then after building those, I picked up a couple old violin cases that were same era, kind of early 1900s, maybe late 1800s, kind of beat up and worn. And I always wanted to build cabinets inside these and trying to figure out like what do they mean and what do they, what's the purpose of them? And then I think my wife had mentioned the song "The Devil Went Down to Georgia," where he just talks about playing the fiddle and how these could be fiddle cases. So I kind of imagined each one as a soul, I guess. The devil traded a fiddle for someone's soul. So there's a skull and then maybe little mementos of their life or things like that. So,
oh, I love that. Yeah. And what does the skull symbolize to you as an artist?
I guess death is the first thing you think of, but for me, I'm coming to realize that it's not death itself that I'm fascinated by it, but the imagery of the skull. Mm-hmm. And thinking back to watching He-Man and Masters of the Universe, and there was the villain with Skeletor with a skull and a skull for a head. And then the main thing that He-Man was trying to protect was Castle Grayskull, which is big, looks like a villain's lair, but it was the good guy's fortress that had this big skull on it. So I don't know, it was always an image that fascinated me, and I kind of enjoy working with it.
Yeah. I loved He-Man too. She-Ra, of course.
Oh, yeah.
My mm-hmm. favorite. But how much does popular culture figure into your works?
I think quite a bit. I think it's maybe not necessarily current stuff, but stuff I watched as a kid. Mm-hmm. I watched, of course, He-Man and reruns of the Munsters when I was in kindergarten, and always like Gremlins and Godzilla. So things that are like monsters and practical effects always fascinated me. And if I could do it all over, I might have tried to get into movies and doing special effects. It just seemed kind of difficult being in Indiana at that time. So,
and your artist statement, you say, "I remember sitting in church one Sunday near Easter, trying to pay attention to the sermon, but failing. I was 6 or 7, maybe. My mind wandered as I looked around the sanctuary." I think it's also interesting, like these, not only do we have these programs that influence us as a child, but religion too, mm-hmm. I'm sure, comes into play when thinking about your work and the symbolism of He-Man and the symbolism of the church. Can you talk mm-hmm. more about that?
Mm-hmm. So I grew up going to church, Methodist, so not heavy on the ritual and stuff as much as Catholicism. So that was always around, and I had trouble paying attention, like I mentioned. But I think the imagery stuck with me, and the pomp and the ritual that goes with communion and things like that kind of stuck with me. So there's kind of fascinated by the imagery and the ritual of it, but not necessarily the faith of it as much.
Yeah.
And then I did join, there's a group called De Molay, which is Masons for kids. Mm-hmm. So I got into that and kind of not really being fully aware of what the Masons were and all that, and kind of always had that, the little ritual stuff that goes with initiation and things into that.
Yeah, I would be lying I was a Job's daughter.
No, oh, yeah.
So I would be lying if I didn't say that whole, like, they make you dress up in these outfits mm-hmm. and perform these ceremonies. I think that there is a real magic to religion and to TV shows. And, you know, that's part of also what you and I have worked together on in terms of the Chicken Chapel, too. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about how you designed that? And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So that came when I first interviewed you, had asked me to think about designing it because you'd had the funding, but still trying to figure out who to design it and hadn't figured it out. So I started thinking about when I thought of chapels and churches and what the imagery that I related to and that I wanted to see. And I remember there was an architectural supply shop in Portland, Maine that I visited one time, and they had these huge arch doors from a church that were 12 foot or 16 feet tall. And I loved them, and I like wanted to build a house around them. Just the, you know, being from a church and also thinking of King Kong and the big gates that they'd open to let King mm-hmm. Kong in or out or whatever it was, and kind of the thought of like, why do you need such big doors? What's behind there? That's kind of where I started from, or at least for the one we picked is where that came from, was wanting to build big doors. And then trying to mess. We had it's kind of a small footprint for such big doors. So I was trying to figure out if it like was right on the entrance and a really tall entrance. And I had somewhere along the lines, I thought of what if the chapel was just half, if it only had half of the doors. And that's where the final image came from, was having the door on the corner. So when you're looking face on, it looks like you've got a chapel in half. Trying to make the most out of the small footprint and still let windows occupy most of the space.
Yeah, I went through about six different designers before meeting you. Because it really did take someone who understood what I was going for, you know, with mm-hmm. and I think there is like it was nice to have someone to where you just got it. You know, I didn't have to explain a lot because I think in a way you're coming from some similar influences, mm-hmm. popular, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of popular culture. I also loved He-Man, and I mm-hmm. also watched the Munsters, and also had weird, well, I mean, my experience with Christianity was more on the evangelical side and not pleasant, but, but it does, like, there is a magic when you're raised, with religion, you know, mm-hmm. you believe in basically miracles can happen. You believe in magic in a way, and it leaves a void, or at least it left a void for me, when I didn't have that faith anymore. And then I had to rebuild an idea of faith. And so having someone work on the chapel, I think you understood that as mm-hmm. well. And I love the big doors. The doors are how many feet tall?
They're almost 12 feet tall at the top. Well, with the faux arches. So the building the full doors was kind of a challenge structurally. So if you look at them, the arches go up to 12 feet. The doors themselves are about 7 feet, mm-hmm. The ones that open. But when they're shut, they kind of, the idea is for them to join together and look like a giant doors.
And they're on the corner, which I, you know, is another thing I really loved about the design, it just joining at the corners in that way. And then, so you hand carved a lot, you did hand carve those doors mm-hmm. and there's symbols on it. Do you want to talk a bit about the symbols and why you chose those outside of the chickens, which obviously we know.
The chickens, there's a few images. There's the alchemy symbol for, yes. I think it's, it also interchanged with femininity. Is on one of the panels. There's a scarab on one of them. It's a seven-sided star. It looks like a Star of David, but it's seven-sided. It's mm-hmm. kind of a symbol that's used a few different ways, but in a lot sometimes it's a symbol that they use to ward away evil spirits. Always like the image of that. There's an all-seeing eye on a few different places.
Yeah, and we carved into the doors Vita Cormium, which, you know, is see my heart in Latin. And from Dante's text, not the Inferno, but the first thing he wrote was a book called A New Life. that was about this woman he was in love with, Beatrice. And it's like a beautiful, like, love story. It's also like about not getting what you want as well. So the chapel, in a lot of ways, is a joining, you know, it's about joining, you know, so it is focused around the divine feminine. And so also, but also joining. And I always say that I believe that everyone is female and that there's just a spectrum of female, and like XY is like women who have penises and XX is just China. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on the radio, but I just think the chapel celebrating, you know, the feminine, because it doesn't get, you know, I think Catholicism celebrates it, but yeah. So and then Robin helped a little bit carve, right?
Yeah, one of the chickens. I kind of did the basic layout and the shape of the chickens. Robin, my wife, carved the finishing details on one of the chickens, and Nazarene carved the other one, who's also done some work on the inside with the wood burning.
And Nazarene's the other artist commissioned to work on the space, and currently you're helping build the cabinet for the panels that she wood burnt three feminine deities, right?
Yep. Yeah, so I'm starting on the cabinet altar piece. I know there's a better term for what it is, but
I know I don't.
Nazarene knows what it is.
She knows what it is.
So the four big panels will be cabinet doors on the lower side, and then there'll be a kind of a shelf for candles and things, and then a larger structure on top of that with the three smaller panels that'll be doors, and then some cubbies for our taxidermy roosters.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you and Nazarene have worked a lot together on that work. And you also, you know, I don't know, we had done the Social Alchemy project. Have you always been interested in this idea of utopia, and this just ended up being a good fit? or did that, you know, when we went to New Harmony, and we went as a big group, Nazarene was there as well. But
I think that it definitely brought to the forefront of my mind. The heterotopia thing, somebody sent it to me later on in the year. So that came about, but yeah, I always thought about it and fascinated by it. But yeah, the trip to New Harmony definitely like helped, made me think of these spaces and how that could actually function.
And I like how you took it and you made it a space that, you know, so I would say like, your exhibit at Tube Factory, you know, is like, it's not about like the happy, like it's a lips. People will be like, oh, it's a little spooky down there, you know? So I like that you are looking at utopia in terms of not just like a Disney World type of experience, or even it's almost like bizarro world, you know? Can you talk more about that?
So one of the descriptions of heterotopias that they say is it's kind of it could be a failed utopia. Like it's, you're trying to get this special place, but there's some character, something, some element in there that's not letting it go, and it goes wrong. So it's still a space unto itself. It's just not, it's not necessarily a happy place or a perfect place, but it's a little microcosm that has its own, goes by its own rules, and has the, you know, the reality isn't the same inside there. So that's kind of what it's going to. So not necessarily completely scary and demonic, but just a little creepy and feels like something's off.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the pieces that you have, like, kind of congregated in the center. You have a piece that is like has gloves, and then there seems to be a character almost who, it's almost like things are centered around that character piece. Can you talk about the works in the center?
So the piece you just mentioned that has gloves, they're cast slip cast hands that have turned into plant holders, basically, and they're in an old chemistry scale. So the scale looks like a terrarium. That's kind of where the idea sprung from, was this glass-contained scale that you could do chemistry experiments inside a controlled space. I just thought having something creepier humanoid inside would be interesting. So I've made the cat made. I had a mold of mannequin hands that I made slip cast pots out of. And then there's a couple that are kind of obscured into these old boxes that I've put old screen on. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like the idea of having the space you can't quite see into, and there's a little mystery because the light doesn't reach everything inside the screens. It's a little obscure. And those were mostly, I don't know, experiments, just try to see what to do, and come playing with old organic pieces of wood that I always thought were interesting that I've collected and put together in place. And then there's the fourth corner is it's an old sewing box that folds up into a rectangular box, but it unfolds and looks interesting. And then a little piece of a cactus sitting on side that just obscure and with little piano claw and ball feet. And that was just a visual thing that I wanted to piece together. Not sure, not a whole lot of meaning behind it. But so the monster, the character in the big case, that was a piece from my graduate thesis. And in grad school, I'd worked on a series of monster reliquaries. I love the idea of a reliquary from Catholicism and many other religions where they, you know, they take this grotesque piece of a person, a bone or a skull or something, and they put it in this very beautiful ornate box to represent what the piece came from. So, you know, arm bone, we put in this silver arm reliquary, or a skull would be in this beautiful bust that you could maybe see the skull and it's kind of obscure. So I worked on a series of monster reliquaries and then gotten into thinking of like who's building the reliquaries and what does their workshop look like. So that's where the case came from, is like the monster is kind of a reliquary in process, maybe. Mm-hmm. So it's a mannequin torso would have added a head and put, I got some fiberglass, jaws from a hyena, I think.
Oh, really?
Somebody cast hyena jaws. So those are in there. And then some shed deer antlers put on the head. So it was, it's that sitting on top of a box where before I'd have more instruments and stuff you could pull through. And so he's kind of I wanted kind of a bigger piece to help fill the space a little. And that piece definitely informed the violin cases and some of my later work since then. And then there's some books in there that I kind of wanted to, if you took the time to look at the titles, there's a Lovecraft collection, which is where the Cthulhu and stuff came from. Mm-hmm. And there's an old anatomy book, and then a Freemason's encyclopedia at the bottom. So I kind of like giving people things to look at. Like if you can glance at it and have one reaction, but if you take time and look longer and find little interesting things, that just kind of entertaining, I guess.
Yeah. So you mentioned monsters. How do you see monsters?
I've always liked them. I like, going back to He-Man, they're like the bad guys were all kind of monstrous, but the good guys had some weird looking guys too. And it was always, for me, they're never all bad. And I always wanted the good guys to be monsters too. And yeah. I just like visually, I like drawn to them. So it's just, I don't know. It's more of a visual thing than I don't like jump scares, but I don't like watching horror movies, but I'll watch the effects and the monsters and see how they do it. Mm-hmm. Like that.
And then why did you decide to make, like, these are kind of terrariums, like the terrariums. Why did you decide to go that direction? The works.
It sprung from the scale. I thought, well, it'd be kind of interesting to do a terrarium. And I've done some cast skulls and stuff that are plant pots and things. So it's kind of the basis of it. But one of the things that kind of inspired me was Wardian cases, which were the original terrariums. I think built in, they're kind of have a negative connotation now with colonialism because they were used, it was built by a guy named Ward for bringing back plants from exploratory trips, a lot of colonial stuff where they'd bring back exotic plants. And on the ships, they'd usually die because they couldn't keep them. But he figured out how to build a Wardian case, which is a, it's like a leaded glass case on a stand or something to preserve plants and bring them back to England so he could look at them. So that's kind of where I came up with the idea of, like, there's this place, Cthutopia, that you can go and visit, and people are bringing back samples of weird stuff that they find there.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was, at one point I had a grander plan of making more of them, making my own terrariums and having more live things in there, but time just got in the way of doing more elaborate stuff.
And the chapel is it's a big job to build a chapel. And one thing that through the pandemic, you and I were dealing a lot with death and dead chickens in particular. I swear, like, it seemed like the top of the week, there'd be like a mink would have gotten into our chicken domes because before the green space renovation. But the mink eventually killed all of our chickens, and you would help bury them a lot of times. And we would try to, I remember, figure out how the thing was getting in. And we'd think we had the chicken domes totally fixed, but no, it was like kind of heartbreaking. So we have the Chicken Palace. Do you want to talk about the Chicken Palace, which has kept our current batch of chickens safe?
During the pandemic, we lost all our chickens, and we getting the green space done. We needed a new one, and we got some funding to build a new chicken coop with Teenworks. So at this point, I was going to go next to the chicken chapel, so I wanted to kind of bounce ideas off of that and kind of thought about architectural follies, which are like a full size, like a shrunken down version of a building that exists. That's kind of where the shape came from, and I think we're going to move it now. But originally, it was going to sit next to it and be kind of a mirrored image of the chapel, but smaller. So it was kind of taking the shape from that and taking the doors, even though it got built first, but I always had the shape of the doors in mind. So it's kind of calls back to an arched door. I had to made it a little simpler for what it was. So it's one big chicken palace that's sitting on a platform now. Eventually we sit on a cement pad of some sort. Our biggest problem was digging with the minks. So this time it's going to be sealing the bottom of it from it so they can't get in. So basic room with a throne they can sit on in there.
You built them a throne and you took the wrought iron stand, I think it
was. Oh, yeah. It was like some sort of shelf or something that I turned upside down, and they like to roost in there.
And you know, it's going on 2 years now, and nothing's gotten in to hurt the chicken babies. And they're very part of the reason, like, people love the chickens, and the chapel is back a ways. I don't know. I kind of, sometimes I have a hard time, and I don't know if it's this way for you too, but sometimes I have a hard time envisioning the campus, like the big building done.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, how is it? It could be that we eventually move the Chicken Palace there, but It seems like they would be so far away back there. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems fine for the chapel to be set back and like into the separate, it's really the park, Terry Sisson Park, is a sacred space, you know? So, yeah, I'm excited about what you did. And can you talk about working with TeenWorks? Because you have led that with me for...
This will be the fourth year this year.
Yeah. And the big projects, so the Chicken Palace, the Wandering Grove, mm-hmm. like we've done some pretty big projects with TeenWorks. Do you want to talk about working with TeenWorks, and do you like it or do you hate it?
In the beginning, it was kind of frustrating just figuring out how to, learning to work with teenagers and how to, navigate that and teaching them a combination of teaching them woodworking skills that, without them getting hurt. It was kind of trying to figure out how to do that. And a lot of times what I've realized, if I have all of them, there's, you know, three or four that are paying attention and there's a few others that aren't paying attention. And then a few others that are goofing off and distracting everyone else. So it's been a big learning curve, but each year it gets easier.
Yeah.
So when I'm going into those projects, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what finding like repetitive tasks, like using the shop saw to cut wood to length, is kind of an easy skill that everybody can have a turn doing it and learn how to use the chop saw. And trying to think of, you know, things that will relate to the real world too. Cause we have tools that you'd only encounter in a woodworking shop. But if I can teach them the chop saw and a table saw and things like that, so they can take those skills out to working on their own home or some other entry-level carpentry job, be helpful.
Yeah, I think it's pretty important what we do with them because, I mean, frankly, sometimes I talk to, like, even adults who don't know how to use a power drill, you know. Mm-hmm. So having access, now high schools don't really have shop class. I had shop class growing up. I don't know if you did, but I use those skills, like, from eighth grade, even today. Mm-hmm. So I'm always impressed with your patience with them, and they are pretty, you know, especially during the pandemic when they weren't really able to see each other. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the masks definitely made a difference. It took them a long time for them to get to know each other and get to know us, and it was kind of difficult, and I'm glad we're past that now.
But yeah, I felt it was really important to like, that was one of the few programs where we still met in person and just masked up, and they really helped us also like get through, like usually we would have those volunteer days and they helped us keep the campus up, you know? So yeah, I always appreciate your work with them and getting it done. These really cool projects that we're doing with them. Wandering Grove was another one of your designs. Do you want to talk about Wandering Grove?
Mm-hmm. It was inspired by there's a group in Germany that kind of does a similar thing where they have these little, or they look like wheelbarrow planter boxes that have benches built in. And in the spring, they'll take trees and shrubs and put them in these planter boxes and kind of roll them around and make little public places for people to come and hang out in an urban area that you wouldn't necessarily encounter these trees. But they do it for a little while and then they go plant the trees out somewhere, and start over the next year. Whereas our idea was to kind of do this, a similar thing, but making a permanent, planter box for these that can still roll around. We can move to placemaking, but the trees are going to stay in these planter boxes and grow. And we did all fruit trees, and they're all dwarf species that are only going to get to 7 or 8 feet at the most. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of a bench built in you can sit on, and the little wheelbarrow wheels, so, and with poles you can put on it and pick it up and roll it around. So we rolled them down to Garfield Park to take some pictures when we finished them up the first time. So yeah, they're little places, little planters that you can take and make a public place more comfortable, like we do with a lot of placemaking and things like that we're already doing. And then these are also all fruit trees, so they'll be productive in that way. Hopefully we'll get some fruit this year, but it'll take a couple of years for them to fully blossom. But we've got a couple apple trees, a couple pear trees. I think I got cherry.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is, they made it through their first winter. They all successfully wintered.
They're all leaves on them now. A couple of them are flowering. So
we'll open the chapel sometime this year. What else is next for you as an artist? What do you want to work on next?
I don't know. I've gotten more into slip casting, because it was a way to, you know, it's something I learned in grad school, and doing ceramics takes a smaller footprint than woodworking. And my grandmother she did china painting. So I got a couple of her smaller kilns.
Oh, neat.
So I can do smaller batches. I have a bigger one that I need to do some work to get going. But I've got a little studio in my basement set up for clay. So I want to do that more and get better at glazing and practice on that. So
cool. Where can people see your work and where can they follow you on social media?
My website is oddboxshop.com. And my Instagram handle is Jason Peter Gray, and Gray with an A. Those places are most active, I guess.
Well, thank you. You can see Jason's show at Tube Factory Art Space now through May 21st. There will also be video documentation if you miss it and you're listening to this and are like, ah. You can also see Jason's work, the Chicken Chapel of Love. It's not quite open, but that is a permanent sculpture, as well as the Chicken Palace. You can see bigcar.org for more information. And Jason, thank you so much for the show and everything you do at Big Car.
Thank you.
All right.